And welcome to the open line edition now of Coast to Coast AM. Lots going on before we go to the calls. Of course, this story about these animals that are dying, birds, fish, crabs, all around this planet now. Fireworks? I think not. As a matter of fact, CNN called me today and they wanted me to appear on their Saturday program to talk about this subject. And I had to turn them down because I'm going to be on a plane heading back. I'm making my trek back to Los Angeles now. I've been here for the holidays in St. Louis in the Midwest. So I couldn't do that. But they're starting to get some interest now in this incredible, bizarre story of these dying animals all around the globe right now. And, you know, the Christians group believes that this could be the beginning of the apocalypse. I don't think so. But who knows anymore? Really, who knows? And I haven't really had a chance to talk with you since the end of our Christmas Eve show, because then I took my 1 week vacation and just hung around St. Louis and saw my kids and my grandchildren and my son's little boy, born on his birthday, as a matter of fact, celebrated his 1 year birthday. So I just did what you have to do when you're under vacation, which is nothing, and enjoy your family and just have some fun. But I'll be back in Los Angeles on Monday. And on the air, and off we go again. So we'll be, oh, by the way, the Android apps, I'm going to be having a couple meetings when I get back to Los Angeles. A lot of you are interested in that. They're working on it. They had some problems trying to get it to work the way our digital folks wanted it to work. So it went back, and they're finishing that up. They're also coming out with a new iPhone update to our app there. So these are all coming down the pike. So you'll enjoy them all. Lots of you still on hold wanting to talk with Linda Godfrey, who's now gone, but we'll still get to you and take your stories, your creature stories. Let's go to Edson in Houston, Texas. Hi, Edson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, George. How you doing?
Good. I'm well. Thank you.
Good. I hope you had a happy New Year's.
Yeah, all is well. I'm looking forward to this year.
Good, good. I had a story. I had a story relating to the creatures. A buddy and I were coming back one night from a bar, and we were driving down the street down the neighborhood, and it's kind of like, it wasn't too dark, you know, just they have street regular neighborhood lights on, and we were driving, and what he actually got a better look of it, and he saw this creature behind kind of like in the sidewalk, but like standing next to a tree.
Okay.
And when he saw it, he pointed it out to me, and I looked quickly, and what I just got a glimpse of it, and it looked what appears to be like if it was like a grasshopper. It had like grasshopper like type legs. And that's what I saw, was like, but it kind of like folded it in and hid behind the tree as we were approaching it.
Did it also have that praying mantis look?
Exactly. Yes, it did. And he described it more like if it had like a mask, like for the face, it looked like more like a mask. The best thing that I could think of was like that movie Mimics. Mimic. Remember those creatures on that movie? It's kind of like the best thing that I could kind of describe what I saw.
How tall was it?
It had to be like when we were approaching it, maybe like 10 yards. Just like 10. It was, we were very close when we were approaching it, and it like, I guess it saw the headlights, and it just appeared to like his legs came upward, like folding in behind the tree.
Was it as big as a man?
Yes, it was. It definitely was tall. It was like maybe like a 6 foot tall person.
God. Well, you know what? We get a lot of UFO reports of creatures that look like praying mantis. And who knows what this thing was? Angela in Tulsa, Oklahoma, it's your turn. Hi, Angela.
Hi, George. Thank you so much for taking my call.
I've actually been
wanting to talk to you since Christmas because I got my first Sea Crane radio, and I just wanted to tell you that I love it. And
it's a great instrument, isn't it?
The reception's amazing. My uncle was actually fascinated with it Christmas Day, looking at it.
Which one did you get? Which one did you get?
The small pocket size one.
The pocket, the SW pocket, yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't realize it was going to be quite that small, but for a radio that small, I mean, it just works amazing. I'm just really happy with it.
Really convenient.
But I had a quick question. I don't know if you've really said anything about it the past few days, but I've been wanting to talk to you about the bird dropping thing. It's interesting that you just said something about CNN contacting you, because after listening to you and your reports about it and then watching the news, I've just been getting so irritated because I feel like the news doesn't know what they're talking about. And I was just wondering if this was government-related. Is there a reason why they're keeping it a secret from us? I didn't know if it was because of the technology, if that's what it is. I was just curious of why they can't really tell us the truth about what's going on.
There is, Angela, something very strange connected to this story. I felt it, and, you know, most of the stories that I get from some inside information, and then also I use this intuitiveness that I've had since I was a kid, whether it's, hey, folks, we're not going to have a pandemic with the swine flu or the H1N1. In this particular case, I felt immediately that there was something very strange, and all the guests we've had on the program agree that there's something weird here. Mm-hmm. What we don't know is whether it's government-related, terrorist-related, you know, anything like that, other than to say, I don't think it's natural. That I'm ruling out. There's just too many of these cases now all around the planet, and they're just happening all at the same time. And, you know, let me rephrase one thing about natural. By that, I mean, I don't think it was lightning or, you know, or fireworks, that kind of thing. But it's very possible there could be some kind of a electromagnetic pulse generated somehow out there in space, you know, some kind of gamma ray, something. Who knows? But it's just weird. This story's weird, and I will not accept the fact that fireworks startle these things.
Especially because the inside of their bodies, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I just wondered maybe if it was government-related, you know, why they're just not telling us the truth. I mean, I know they keep stuff from us, but I was just curious your opinion on that.
It very well be. I just think it's a bizarre story. We won't let it die. Well, let's find out what happens. Let's go next to Jeff in Arkansas. Welcome to the program. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, George. How you doing? Jeff.
Good.
In Smith, Arkansas.
Were you close at all to any of these birds that fell?
I think I'm about 2 hours away. That's down in BB, Arkansas.
Yeah. Sure is.
I believe you head down to Mena and then from there get lost.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that's out there. But I have a friend that lives there.
And what did he say?
Well, actually, it's a girl. She's got a beautiful name. Her name is Phaedra. And I haven't talked to her yet. But word on the street around here is that they think it may be some volcanic activity that's, you know, pushing gas up through the water and through the sky. Because they're, you know, they're saying that the fish and the birds died, and that kind of makes sense. I also could, you know, easily think that maybe some Air Force jets went by and shot a radio beam signal or something and, you know, killed something in a square mile range.
But, you know, now it's happening all around the planet. Italy, Sweden, Louisiana, all over the place.
That is amazing, yes. And that does look like it's engineered.
It really does.
But what I wanted to call you about is I was a student at Mississippi State University, and I was staying in the dormitory, and I got moved out of the dormitory because there's too many incoming freshmen, so they gave me an apartment that's across the street from the campus, and the people in the housing department said that these apartments are located just off campus. So I got arrested for having my deer rifle in my closet, and when the police came in, they said, even though these apartments are off campus, we still own the property, so you're under arrest. So I just wanted to tell all the listeners that I got charged with a felony, thrown out of Mississippi State University. The director of student conduct said that I was in possession of a professional sniper's rifle.
Oh, my God.
And I've been thrown out of school for a year.
Did you ever get vindicated?
No. This just happened about 3 months ago. So I've gone to court a couple of times, and I'm doing that. And basically, I've decided, I mean, I just think this is absolutely the most insane thing. I mean, if you look at it, really look at it in the bare bones, I got arrested by a bunch of hillbillies for being a hillbilly.
That tells you how paranoid, Jeff, everybody is.
I'm in Starkville, Mississippi, and I got arrested for having a deer rifle by people who have better deer rifles than I do.
Sure. Well, you know what? I hope you win in any appeal that you might have to go through. That's a bizarre story. Let's go to our international line. Nick, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi, Nick.
Top of the morning to you, George.
Hey, how are you?
Great show you got going on tonight. I'm really enjoying it. Sorry, I missed Linda.
She's a good lady.
Two personal encounters with creatures. The first one is a short one, I'll tell you real quick, and the second one is a real stunner. I was just picking up the sea over the windowsill at home, back at that tender age. And one morning early, before my dad left for work, my mother motioned to him and had him come to the window, and I was always a nosy, precocious kid, so I ran there too and stood on my tiptoes and looked out. And we lived in a heavily forested area, and we had kind of a grassy yard behind the house. And there were three animals grazing or foraging back there, and they looked like big dogs, kind of wolfish looking, you know, hungry and lean. I didn't realize how big they were. Well, one of them apparently saw a motion at the window and trotted over and got up on his hind legs and stood with his paws up on the window. Now, I still have this house. And I just recently measured it, and it's about 8.5 feet from the ground to the windowsill. So that means okay. This thing on paws were 8.5 feet off the ground, and its face was fully framed in the window.
Jeez.
Definitely a canine of some sort. But, you know, just outlandishly large. I froze with fear. Well, my mother took us into the center of the house away from the windows, and my dad watched for about another hour till these things moved off and away, and we never saw them again after that. At least they never told us.
And I bet it didn't bother you at all.
We didn't see them again. No, not at all. I was very concerned about that for years. You know, we had the whole forest at our disposal there. I mean, we could go anywhere we liked, and it was great for a kid. But I always had that in the back of my mind. What if I happen to run into one of these things? What am I going to do?
You better run.
To this day, I still dream about them occasionally. You know? I wouldn't be at all surprised to see one.
Well, you know, until I started talking to Linda, Nick, I didn't realize how many of these cases were all over North America. Whatever these creatures are, they seem to be everywhere. First-time caller, Steve in Wisconsin. Hey, Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. Happy New Year to you.
You too, Steven.
Say, this is a story for Linda, and hopefully she'll get this information. She mentioned Deerfield, Wisconsin, and she mentioned Jefferson, Wisconsin. And right in between there is Lake Mills, Wisconsin, where there's a pyramid, they say, in the lake. There's a burial ground pyramid in the park at Aztec Park. Are you familiar with the pyramid that has the legs of an animal?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I see a correlation there, possibly, and also with Stephen Quayle was mentioning part of the reason for the Great Flood was people inbreeding with animals.
Well, whatever that reason was for the Flood, they were out to destroy mankind, to be sure. And, yes, that's one of Steve's theories.
I just thought I'd throw that out there because, and then the lakes in Wisconsin and McGonigal, there's Phantom Lake where there was Indians reported a creature that lived there in the lake would walk around in there because it's a real shallow lake.
What did the creature look like?
They never really described it. It would walk around in there.
Well, you know, when I was a little boy, I saw a monster come out of a creek. This thing was huge. And I'm telling you, it was real. I thought maybe it was a giant turtle. I mean, a huge giant turtle. And then it went right back down again. But it was the strangest thing I've ever seen. Let's go next to Russell in Cincinnati, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hi, Russell. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, George? I want to talk to you. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I want to tell you some of the things that our government lied to American people about. Number one, My Lai was not a friendly village. It was a communist supply point, and Lieutenant Galley got framed. The second thing was they dropped 95% pure heroin by parachute, the CIA did, and said that the Vietnamese would use the drugs and wouldn't be able to fight. They wouldn't touch heroin, but they sold it to GIs. That's why the GIs, so many of them came back being drug addicts. And the other thing is, when we came back, they put on the applications when we went to get jobs, do you or have you ever smoked marijuana? And it was a lose-lose question. If you put yes, used in Vietnam, no longer used, they wouldn't hire you because you were a drug problem. And if you put no, they wouldn't hire you because they thought you were a liar. And in 1975, George, 50% of returned Vietnam veterans were in federal prison, 35% for crimes of violence, because a lot of those guys had families. They couldn't get jobs. They went out, robbed stores and things like that, and they ended up in jail. And it was our own government's fault.
That percent is that high? I didn't know it was that high.
Yeah, in 1975, 50%, and out of that 50%, 38% worked for crimes of violence.
I wonder what the Iraqi and Afghan numbers look like. What do you think?
I don't know, but you know, with the PTSD that they've got, and you know, now some of us, we had it, but it was in a different way. When I came back, I had it over the fact that I was guilty that I was alive because I was single. I didn't have a girlfriend or anything like that. But a lot of my good friends had wives and children, and they died. And it really bothered me, and it was another type of a PTSD, if you want to call it like that, because you're like, well, why am I alive and these guys died?
I know it's
got to
be.
And I got on a guilt complex, and I went to the VA and I talked to the psychiatrist about it, and he just told me that it was a Vietnam syndrome. But yeah, Lieutenant Galley was framed because that was a communist supply point, because I was in Vietnam in 69 and 70 when that took place. They should have never sent a journalist, because when he came back, he lied to the American people and turned them against us.
And at those points, you did not know who had a gun against you, did you?
That's right. Matter of fact, I was in the fire department, and the only weapon I had was a .45, and it was locked in a foot locker, and all I had was a 5-round clip, and the only time we got it was whenever there was red alert. We was at the one landing zone, and this lieutenant major came and told us there was 2,300 NVA, and we were the first bunker after the bunker line, and he told us it was up to us to defend the base. And I asked him, I said, how do you think we're going to do it? He said, why? I said, we don't have a 16, we don't have an M60, no 50s, no grenades, nothing. We didn't have nothing but a 45. That was it.
Well, I want to thank you, Russell. I want to thank you for serving. We got to hit this break. I'll be back. Absolutely, and want to thank all of you for supporting Coast to Coast. This is our traditional shout out. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations across North America, hello. Streamlink members, Coast Insiders, as you are now called, XM Satellite. And then the various chat rooms and groups, NighthawkZone.com folks, hello there. Imaginative Worlds, Into Infinity, National Radio Club, Sorcery, IRC, the MySpace groups, Facebook, Twitter folks, Yahoo Chat, Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, Above Top Secret, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters, and our buddy Greg the Cook in St. Louis. Thank you to all for keeping Coast to Coast the number one rated late night talk show in the world. Back in a moment with the rest of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go. Back to the phones. Let's go to Turlock, California. Lucas, get us started. Hey, Lucas.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing.
I'm calling about angels. I've been wanting to call, especially when you've had guest speakers talking about angels.
Mm-hmm.
And since a few years ago, I've been into angels, and I guess it's called angelology or whatever. But recently, I was reading a book called A Dictionary of Angels, and it mentions something that I found very interesting. It talks about angels being charged with folly. And this is what I was wanting to ask. I had been wanting to ask your guest speakers if they had heard about it, and if so, like what they thought about it. But I actually found it. It's actually in the Bible, in the book of Job.
What does it say?
It says, I actually have it right here.
Just paraphrase it. You don't have to read it.
It says, God has no trust in his servants, and he charges his angels with folly. And I know it's really important. I found it in this Dictionary of Angels. I know it's really important. And here it is in the Bible. I found it.
I assume by this time you're a believer in angels now, right?
Yeah, I believe in angels, and I've had visions of angels, and this is really important to me in my own path. Like, I can't trust them. Like, I can't rely on them. And it's really important to know that.
And really? Why don't you trust them? You think
something's... Well, they can make mistakes. The second part of the verse says he charges them with folly. They can make mistakes. Like, sometimes they make mistakes. Like, sometimes they don't even have faith, or sometimes they're afraid, and they're foolish sometimes like that. So they can't always be... They can't be relied upon. Always.
So they make some judgmental errors.
They make errors.
Let's just hope our guardian angels don't make any mistakes.
I know. Let's hope we follow Christ.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Lucas. You know, I like great angel stories, too. And, you know, especially around those special holidays when we take those kinds of calls as well. Chuck in Fairbanks, Alaska, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, George. How you doing today?
Good, good. Is it getting cold up there?
You know, we had like the third coldest December on history, and now it's just, it's really mild. And this time of year, it can be 50 below. Let me look at my thermometer. It's 15 above, which is just wonderful. Wonderful.
A heat wave in Fairbanks.
Yeah, we've actually, you know, people, you think of us being so far north, but we're not exactly a continental climate. We've got a lot of influence from the ocean, although we're in the interior here. Alaska gets weather from all over the world, and it's really an exciting place as far as the changing of the seasons. And it's a good secret that we don't want a lot of people knowing about it, but it's not nearly as bad up here as the weather as people would think, so... Well, yeah, we don't want everybody moving up here.
Any creatures up that way?
We do. You know, six of our eight kids are adopted. Then we've got all kinds of native cultures and 240 villages that are remote, and everybody has a legend. There's the Gugga and the Stick Man and the lady out in Nome. That was a really neat story. She's from Inupiat, and then we've got a family down in the Yupik area. They have some really scary creatures, and my family history is from Arizona. My great-grandmother, my brother, found a manuscript that she wrote, and she was an early-day ethnobotanist, and she a real interesting book, and she actually published it, and it's called Wolf Killer, and it's about this gentleman who was... She studied the plants to find out their uses back in the 20s, and it was actually published. But in this book, my brother published about this gentleman who had shot this old Navajo man who worked with my grandmother, and he was a plant gatherer for the medicine man. But he got his name of Wolf Killer by shooting a wolf, and he came up to it, and it was a man. You know, that could have been the shapeshifter they talked about.
Sure, absolutely.
But it's all over. But, you know, George, I wanted to comment on, you were talking about earth changes and Christians thinking this is the end. And, you know, you get a feeling about things, but the earth changes really aren't the indication. But there's a lot of little subtle things like the people coming back to Israel and the big signs. I'm not a real scholar on this. They haven't even begun yet, but... The thing that I can't understand, and I've heard people on your program talk about prophecy, where they say for things to really start the end, there has to be peace in the Mideast. And how that is going to happen, I have no idea. But, you know, right now you couldn't see, if you see some peace treaty or some man come in and bring peace, then, man, I'd be getting...
get a little worried.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be worried because it's a start of a new earth, and you know, everybody talks about it, all the cultures, but when you start seeing somebody bring in peace, and I can't see how that would happen. Can you, in the Mideast?
Not for a while. Not until they get the Palestinian situation wrapped up, and I don't see that happening right now. I wish it would, but I don't.
Yeah, but you know, in Revelation it talks a lot about animal die-offs. Third, I just read it. I haven't read it in a long time, but I think it's 2/3 of the animals and 2/3 of the people die off. So, you know, it is going to happen, but I don't think this is it, like you're saying.
Did you see the movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage?
I didn't.
You've got to go rent it. It's been on cable lately. It's our show. Everything we talk about, it's in there.
All right, George. All right. Thanks.
Okay, let's go to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Kurt, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
Hey, I've been interested in Bigfoot since about 1976 when there was a few sightings near the La Crosse area in Wisconsin. Since then, I've read thousands of stories of different encounters across North America and so on. Recently, within the past 3 years or so, I got involved with a Bigfoot organization who goes out and does expeditions, numerous expeditions per year, and got involved with a couple in Wisconsin here in Minnesota also. I convinced my son, who's MP in the military, and he's taken his training and stuff and done night reconnaissance missions during his practice and stuff at the bases and whatever. Okay. So I convinced him to go along with me. And growing up, I had always told him stories, and he was always telling me, Dad, Bigfoot is a mythical creature. It does not exist. So I took him along on a trip with me, and these expeditions usually involve between 2 and 3 dozen people, and we wander the woods during the day, familiarizing ourselves with trails and so on, and at nighttime we go out and use thermal devices and night vision devices. And I had talked to my boy, and he was more than willing to lay in the woods in a spot that I put him in where nobody else knew he was. And he was going to lay there all night long and just see if anything happened. Everybody's on walkie-talkies on the same channel, and everybody has to announce any movement they're making, you know, to make sure that if you're seeing a shadow, you know it's a group walking by or something like that. No dogs, no guns allowed or anything like that. So he's laying in the woods, and all of a sudden he had come on the radio and he said he had seen eyeshine. And he describes this eyeshine. It was over about an 8 or 10 second period of time. And the eyeshine, and I forget the order of the colors of eyeshine that appeared, but it started off as red glowing eyes that faded out and then faded in as amber glowing eyes and then faded out and faded back in as white glowing eyes, all coming from the exact same spot 30 yards away from him, what we stepped off the following day. And at that point, he picked up the thermal device and describes a upright figure leaning out from behind a tree, and he said it was a massive, massive body. And he was pretty wound up by the time he saw it. And then he took off out of the woods, and I met him down the trail, and he was just worked up and shaking. And he says, Dad, there's nothing like that should be living in these woods. But the next day, the whole group went out there, and we saw a footprint in the mud, and we had him laying in the spot he was the night before. We got pictures and stuff, and the scientists are taking looking really close at the trees, hoping to find hair samples and so on. And I stood in the spot where the creature was standing, and I leaned out behind the tree, and there was branches that we measured. The creature was at least 7.5 feet tall. Jeez. Possibly 8 feet tall, depending on if its knees, you know, were bent a little bit or so on. The head guy in the organization, you know, of course, he says, oh, you just saw a little one then. There's numerous sightings that these groups have seen all across North America. So that's all they do. Okay. And I wanted to comment on the eye shine. From what I have heard, people typically see one set of color of eyes, and they're glowing red or glowing amber or so on.
Right.
And what they were saying is that's just the color of their eyes, or some say that it's a way that they communicate. Now, my opinion or theory is that my son had seen these three sets of glowing eyes, and the head guy of the organization said my son was the first one to ever see three different glowing eyes coming from the same creature.
That's bizarre, isn't it?
But my theory is, we as humans use our regular eyes, and if we can't see very good, we'll use night vision, and if we need to see something different, we use thermal. And I'm thinking that these creatures have that built-in ability, something similar on their own.
And they just kind of change.
If they're looking at something, he was just laying on the ground in the woods in camo gear, not that he was hiding or anything, and he didn't hear a sound as this thing come up, but he laid there and the different eye colors changed, and as he described it to me, it seemed like it was looking at him, then it wasn't sure what he was seeing, then it switched its eye colors to get a different type of view.
I bet it turned him into a believer this time, didn't it?
He definitely turned into a believer, yes.
All right, let's go to Jeff in Maui. Get you in here, Jeff, before the break, if we can. Go ahead, Jeff.
Aloha, George.
Hey, Jeffrey, aloha to you. Hey, we're building a studio on the Big Island, so I'll spend a little time in Hawaii.
Oh, cool.
It'll be my far west stuff. Yeah, it's on the Kona side.
Oh, cool.
So I'm looking forward to that. What's going on?
Well, I just kind of wanted to talk about this health care plan. It's my understanding that Obama's using Hawaii as his template for his health care. And what they've done to my girlfriend, if that's true, we're in a lot of trouble.
Oh, what happened? No health care for her or what?
Well, they've got her supposed health care. She was supposed to have a surgery over a year ago, and they sent her to Oahu to these specialists that were supposed to do the surgery.
Right.
Two different ones. And one did a procedure that did damage.
Oh.
And then they sent her to another one that did another procedure that did more damage, to where now she bleeds every time she urinates. And then they said they were going to send her to Texas, where her family is. So we went ahead and, got out of our apartment and shipped everything there. And 3 days before we're supposed to go, they said that they wanted to send her back to the first doctor that did the damage in Oahu. They weren't going to send us over there. And then we get a notice saying that she didn't need the surgery. It wasn't necessary. And that we could talk to the doctor who made the decision and we could put in an appeal. But we spent almost 100 hours on the phone trying to get in touch with this doctor.
Jeff, this and the whole modification program, they're both disasters. I'm sorry to say. I wish they would have worked, but they're not. I'll be back with more calls in a moment.